Coming through there, guys? Good morning. Firstly, I just wanted to say special good morning. It's really great to have the Ignite guys in this morning. So really lovely to have you guys in. And yeah, I hope you really sort of enjoy hearing God's word this morning. So I'm going to do a little bit of an icebreaker. This could go wrong, okay? So we're having, you know, it's harvest, we're celebrating harvest. We're in rural Somerset in a deep sort of agricultural area. I just want you to look towards somebody next to you. Look deep in their eyes and say, "Who are Jesus de Levi?" Well done. Thank you, guys. Well done. That was Gert Lush. Okay, if you're a visitor, please don't let that put you off. Okay. And if you're somebody who's very strict on grammar, then you can forgive me later. We're going to be touching into forgiveness a little bit, so there's opportunity. You can forgive me for that one later. So we're going to be looking at it's 1 Samuel chapter 25, looking particularly at a lady called Abigail. If we can just have the first one up, well done, Ujan. And we're going to be looking at Abigail, a little bit about Abigail's life, but also it connects with the story of King David, and not king at this stage, and somebody called Nabal, who's married to Abigail. We're in our discipleship series, aren't we, at the moment? So plan is, this story throws up a few themes, really, around reconciliation and around forgiveness. So during the second half of what I share this morning, we'll be just touching into the area of forgiveness a little bit. And there will be opportunity for prayer ministry at the end for those of you who would like it. It's a really long chapter, so I'm not going to read all of it. If you get a chance later today or later this week, then have a good read of it. It's a great story, and you'll have insights that I haven't had. So, have a good read later on. So the story, the outline of the story, we have a king called Saul, who is an outgoing king. He's done wrong things, and the prophet Samuel has spoken to him and told him he's not going to be king for much longer. So we have an outgoing king who's still king at the moment, Saul, and we have the king-elect, who is David. And David has been anointed by the prophet Samuel to be king. And Saul is chasing David. He is trying to kill David. He is jealous of David. Into this mix, we learn in verse 1 that now Samuel has died. So Samuel had died. So if there was an influence that helped with stability, it would have been Samuel, who was well respected. He has now died, and it's quite an unstable country, quite a lack of internal peace, really. So David is on the run, and David is camping, and he's looking after the interests, protecting the interests of a wealthy stockman called Nabal. It says that Nabal had 3,000 sheep and 3,000 goats. I don't know, John Adicott, do you know how many acres that would require? Farming community. How many acres, John, do you think? About 500 acres, so quite a lot of land. We also learn that Nabal was a surly and a bad-tempered man, but he is married to a beautiful and clever lady called Abigail. Now, without wanting to embarrass anybody, any Abigails here this morning? No. Anybody with a daughter called Abigail? Jonathan and Kath, do you know what the meaning of the name? No. Well, so I really put you on the spot there, didn't I? But basically, the meaning of the name Abigail, I think the technical meaning is she brought joy to her father, or bringer of joy. So it's a really great name. Abigail, actually, probably in this culture, she's a lady actually of some status, virtue of the fact she's married to this chap Nabal. We learn that she has maid servants. She probably also has some male servants as well. So it's not little Abigail. Actually, as far as it goes in this culture, she's a lady of some standing and some status. And the process that happens is this. David has been protecting Nabal's sheep and goats and protecting his men in the wilderness. And he then goes to Nabal and does something that was customary. He asks, or his men ask on his behalf, for some provision, for some food. And Nabal ends up insulting David and his men and turning them away, saying there's no way he's going to give them anything. David's furious. He plans to kill Nabal and his household. And Abigail learns of this. Abigail gets some gifts together, some sheep and some cakes, and goes to David with the gifts, and very persuasively she speaks to David, and David relents. He sees Abigail's wisdom. He sees actually that this would not be the will of God, and actually he decides not to go ahead and kill Nabal. So just read, this is what he says to Abigail. This is verses 32 through to 35. David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you to meet me today. Blessed be your good sense, and blessed be you who have kept me today from blood guilt and from avenging myself by my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there would not have been left to Nabal as much as one male." Then David received from her hand what she had brought him. He said to her, "Go up to your house in peace. See, I have heeded your voice, and I have granted your petition." And the end of the story, the last part of the chapter, Nabal dies. It's a bit curious how that happens. It says he was struck by the Lord. He hears what's happened, and about 10 days later, he dies. And David hears of this. He then sends to Abigail. He woos her, and she becomes his wife. So in the end, it sort of ends up quite well for David, really, probably quite well for Abigail as well in some ways. So before we just think about Abigail and her sort of mission to David, if you like, there's this conflict, if you like, there's this situation between Nabal and David where they are on the verge of combat. It's good just to look at how that happens, as it's something that happens today in our world all the time in pretty much exactly the same way. Nabal says to David in verse 10, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants today who are breaking away from their masters." Nabal's saying a couple of things there. He's firstly saying, "You're a servant breaking away from your master." So what he's saying is, "I am siding with Saul in the disagreement, the argument that's going on. I am siding with Saul." And he's saying a second thing. He's saying, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse?" He's being very demeaning and basically saying, "I don't put any value on you. I don't value you or your men as people, as human beings. You are the enemy, you are the other." And this concept of the other and how we see other people and how we see people differently, really quite important. It can happen in quite comical ways sometimes in our society, can't it? I remember some years ago, Claire and I were on holiday on the west coast of Scotland, and we were staying at a lovely place called Appin. I don't know, Linda, do you know Appin at all? Or, no, okay. I mean, Scotland is big, isn't it? So, yeah. staying at a lovely place called Appin, and we were chatting with the old sort of patriarch of this family, and he was just explaining how his son and his daughter-in-law now looked after the business. But whenever he spoke about his daughter-in-law, he would say, "Of course, she's not from round here." And I was thinking, oh, perhaps he means, you know, she's from Cornwall or New York or somewhere like that. And then he said, no, she's from Ballyhoolish. And I thought, well, we just drove through a Ballyhoolish. It's just, you know, sort of a few miles up the road. He can't mean that Ballyhoolish. I thought, but maybe there's another Ballyhoolish in Scotland up near Inverness or somewhere like that. But actually, as I chatted with him more, it's very clear that his daughter-in-law came from this Ballyhoolish just a few miles away, but it sort of marked her out as somehow she's different. She's not from round here. She was from Ballyhoolish. Anybody used to watch Fawlty Towers? I've seen any repeats of Fawlty Towers. Yeah, really funny series, isn't it? Anybody remember the name of the waiter? Manuel. Anybody remember where he came from? Yeah. And you know, there'd always be this excuse when Manuel would do something a bit daft, and then Basil Fawlty or his wife Sybil would sort of look at the guest and say, "I'm sorry, he's from Barcelona." That would sort of, you know, justify it. But it was something in a comical way that sort of marked Manuel out as being different. But actually, it can become really quite serious, as it is becoming between Nabal and David. Nabal really sees David as the other, as different, in quite a negative way. Can we just pop up the next slide, please, Ujan? So the quote here, this is from an Anglican clergyman called Brian Castle. I should put the Reverend Brian Castle up there, shouldn't I, really? He says this, makes this statement, "When a person is put into the category of being less than human, that provides justification to treat that person in less than human ways." I'm sure we can think of examples in history. Perhaps a big one we think of is the Holocaust in the last century. Hitler saw many people as the other, didn't he? Saw them differently, and particularly with the Jewish people. And firstly, he saw them as different, then he saw them as the problem, and then he saw them as less than human and would treat them as such. But actually, it's something that's going on between Nabal and David. Something actually goes on around us all the time in smaller ways. I sometimes hear people, thankfully not in Welton Church, but occasionally at work, somebody might refer to somebody as a waste of space. You ever heard that sort of phrase? And actually, that's kind of quite a big thing to say, really, and not true, and certainly not what Jesus would say. This is something that Jesus really challenged in his earthly ministry, this attitude towards the other, this idea of how we see the other. I don't know if you remember the story of Zacchaeus. You know, Zacchaeus, he's a tax collector. He's hated. He's seen as a collaborator with Rome. And Jesus sees him in the tree and calls him down and says, "No, I'm going to actually eat at your house today." And he goes, and Zacchaeus, his life is changed. He says he'll return any monies that have been embezzled, and he will change his ways. And Jesus said, you know, he too is a son of Abraham. And what Jesus is saying is, this other, this one that you see as not worthwhile, not of value, God looks at him and says, no, he's human, he has value, I can touch and change his life. Same with the Samaritans as well. Samaritans were hated. They were seen as not being ethnically pure. And the way they worshipped, where they worshipped. And Jesus, then, he tells a really famous parable, which has probably become one of the most famous stories in the Bible. We know it as the Good Samaritan, don't we? And he speaks with a Samaritan woman at a well. And again, this group of people that are being looked at and said, no, they don't have value, they're not really, they don't really measure up. Jesus says, no, God looks at them and says, it's different. They really do measure up in his eyes. They're fully human, he wants to touch their lives, he can really do something good in their lives. So anyway, this process in a negative way of seeing somebody as different and as the other has brought Nabal and David to the verge of combat. And David says to his men, strap on your swords. And when you say this in ancient Israel with the warfare that took place there, it was not an easy process. You had to wrap a sword belt around you a number of times. So when you do this, you are saying, you know, this is it. It's very intentional, and there's no going back from this point. And then enter this lady, Abigail. And Abigail really begins to act as a mediator between Nabal on the one hand and David on the other hand. Now, we hear of Nabal, we're told in verse 17, that he was so ill-natured that no one can speak to him. That sounds a little bit like me after a run of night shifts, my wife might tell you. Got Nabal with that behaviour on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have the warrior David and his men who have strapped on their swords. There's no turning back. He's seeing red mist. They're going in for the kill. Abigail comes into this situation, and yes, she's representing self-interest as she goes to David, has to think quickly. Yes, she's looking to protect Nabal and her household and her interests, but she sees David completely differently than Nabal sees David. She sees him as a human being, she sees him as having value, and she sees the hand of God on his life. She says that David is a prince of the house of Israel, that God's going to build him a sure house. And really sees him in that way, differently. Sees him as of value and with a purpose in God. And she actually understands also the need for forgiveness. She really stands in the breach and says in verse 24, "Upon me alone, Lord, be the guilt." She probably understands forgiveness from living with Nabal. It doesn't seem like she's bitter or angry, but she's probably had to repeatedly forgive him for things. And she understands now that forgiveness needs to occur. And we're thinking about our discipleship. Forgiveness is a central thing, isn't it, to our discipleship. Anybody here finds forgiveness easy, forgiving other people? was going to say, if anybody put their hand up, then you can come and pray for me later, because I struggle with it. It's difficult, isn't it? Just a little story that Claire and I have. We sell eggs on our gatepost. Sell them for £1.20 a box, and have an honesty box which went missing, and we just encouraged neighbours to put some money through the letterbox. Anyway, about 3 weeks ago, I put out two boxes of eggs, and I went out, and they'd gone. There was no money on the carpet, and there was just a calling card of this sort of grubby old sort of plastic bottle had been left in the little egg hut that we have. And it's funny the things that can sometimes provoke you, isn't it? You can't always anticipate where that's going to come from. But I felt really, really angry for about an hour. I was playing it over in my mind, and I was thinking, a bit like David, how can I, you know, retaliate and get my revenge? I planned to set up a camera sort of outside that would film the perpetrators. And as Claire will actually tell you, I'm not particularly gifted with DIY, so that's a bit of a non-starter. I'd have to speak to Pete Skinner, somebody who understood those, or somebody who'd even do it for me, like Pete Skinner, perhaps. So I gave up that idea, and then I thought, well, actually, it happened on a Wednesday night. I think they have a sports club sort of down on a Wednesday night. It's probably somebody from there. What I'll do is I'll, after tea on Wednesday, I'll come up and I'll sort of crouch down behind the wall, and then when the egg stealer appears, I'll pop up. I'll just appear, like Mr. Ben, if anybody remembers Mr. Ben. And I don't know what I'd do at that point, give them an invoice for £2.40 or something for the eggs. Anyway, I was sort of really going through all this, and then I just went through the process of, no, this is ridiculous, God, I forgive them. Forgave them. Several hours later that evening, it suddenly popped up again. I was suddenly thinking of all this kind of revenge and retaliation and had to go through the process again. And that's quite a light-hearted sort of story, isn't it? Quite a, you know, a small matter. But there are more serious issues that we face. There's quite a big group of people here, and we'll have been hurt in a lot of ways. There are things, you know, there will be betrayal, abuse of different kinds, people really letting us down. It's a story of a couple called Alan and Maureen Greaves, a gentleman called Alan Greaves, and he was going to play the organ at his church for Midnight Mass in December 2012. On his way to play the organ, he was viciously beaten up, and he died 3 days later. Two men were later arrested and convicted of his murder, but at the memorial service for Alan, his widow, Maureen, spoke these words, really about forgiveness and about her walk with God. She says, "It has to be a daily act of saying, I place them into your hands, God, so that I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to hate them. After the massive shock and heartbreak, this was probably the most difficult thing I have ever had to do, to go down the path of forgiving them. It has been a wonderful release that I have not had the burden of hatred towards them. I have to do it every day so I don't lapse. It's not an easy journey to look two men in the face who have killed the person you love most in the world and hang on to that. When you are sitting there in court and you see them and you are heartbroken at what they have done to you, they have taken from you the person who is still your soulmate. It is very difficult to sit there and continue to forgive them and want to forgive them. One thing I have comforted myself with is that the God I believe in had a son who was beaten as Alan was beaten. The God I believe in had a son who was resurrected, as I believe Alan will be resurrected to be with God." It's a really powerful story of forgiveness, isn't it? Not being like David, going after the revenge, not having the burden of hatred, but also having to continue to forgive. But the great hope that Maureen Greaves knew that Jesus was beaten, but Jesus had been raised from the dead, and had that hope also. A really good understanding of the resurrection in that, isn't there? That Alan would be resurrected to be with God. Sure, 20 years or so ago now, I heard a pastor teach on forgiveness, and he just gave three steps that I found really, really helpful in my own walk with God. These are that I practice. Can we just pop the next slide up, please, Ojan? Just three simple steps. So number one, just to say, I totally forgive. And actually name the person. Sometimes we can't always name them, but I think often that we can. So I totally forgive. Number two, they owe me nothing. So I'm not going to walk in resentment. I'm not going to keep it back. I'm not going to, you know, save it and produce it and say, well, actually 5 years ago, you know, you did this. And number three, the best bit, the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ is sufficient for me. So I totally forgive. They owe me nothing. The grace of the Lord Jesus Christ is sufficient for me. So the problem is, when we take things into our own hands, as David was tempted to do to get revenge on Nabal, it sort of takes it out of God's hands, and then we're almost in a way saying that Jesus' grace isn't sufficient. And there is an enemy, isn't there? There is an enemy who has a plan, a strategy against our lives, against our churches. And one thing, one main strategy that he will always come back to, time and time again, is he will work on this axis of unforgiveness. It's something that gives him a foothold. So as disciples of Jesus, one thing that we're doing is when we are forgiving, effectively we are disarming the enemy. We are weakening his power. We're not giving him the foothold. And also, in terms of our discipleship, what's the goal? What's the goal of discipleship? What's the sort of aim of it? Mark's spot on, absolutely. Make us more like Jesus. So what we're trying to do is be more like Jesus. And when we go down the route of forgiveness, we're stepping out of the enemy's, out of agreement, if you like, even unintentional agreement with the enemy, and we're stepping into agreement with God and with Jesus. And we are becoming more like Jesus, who demonstrated forgiveness, who teaches us to forgive in the Lord's Prayer and other places in the Scripture. So as disciples of Jesus, we are saying, yes, I am serious about being a disciple of Jesus. I want my life to look like that of Jesus when we choose to walk in forgiveness. One of the things that Abigail said to David, and she really stressed it, she was basically saying, you know, David, if you kill Nabal and his household, God will not be able to justify that action. He will not be able to bring you into the destiny that he intends for you. You'll cut off the grace and the purposes of God in your life. Did David forgive Nabal? That's open to question. But he did heed this advice. He didn't take revenge. And what actually happens is David eventually gets crowned king. He actually gets crowned king of a united kingdom of Israel. So Israel and Judah together. His son Solomon inherits that kingdom. And it's a period known as the golden age of the monarchy in Israel. And it was a period of, yes, there were some problems, but it was a period of relative peace. It was a period of prosperity. It was a period of renown in the nations. Solomon builds the first temple. We have the Queen of Sheba visiting him to seek his wisdom. So it was a time of success, of fruitfulness in many ways. And up to this point in the story, David had done well. He makes mistakes later with Bathsheba and that sort of thing. But up till now, he'd done really well. But if he'd gone ahead and killed Nabal and killed Nabal's household, would the golden age of the monarchy, this very prosperous period in Israel, ever have happened? It came to an end under Solomon's son Rehoboam, and it never ever happened again. It was never reunited. But would this period actually have happened without this godly, peacemaking woman, Abigail? And pop up the last slide, please, Ojan. So a couple of little questions, just as a thought. Is there anyone I see as the other in a negative way? That could be somebody from a different nationality. It could be somebody at work you see as a threat. I remember going to a conference some years ago, listening to a man called John Eldridge, and he said something about, I guess you guys think this is all very American, and there was a huge kind of ripple of laughter through the crowd, and he just looked at us and said, yeah, that one got through, didn't it? As if to say, oh, okay, you really do see that perhaps this is a bit, and actually there can be different sort of attitudes in terms of how do we see the other. Is it in a positive way, or is it in a way that sort of breaks a bridge, burns a bridge, rather than builds a bridge? And secondly, Is there an act of peacemaking, reconciliation, or forgiveness that could have a profound impact in my life and that of others? Could be a small act, it's a ripple effect, isn't it? Abigail didn't realise what she was doing, the impact it would have. It's like dropping a pebble in a lake, and just the ripples go out and can have a much more significant effect and impact than we ever realise. Okay, so there's going to be a sort of an offer for prayer, the worship, before sort of chairs move and things, just literally 2 more minutes. The prayer ministry team are going to come up and going to be around the sides and the back of the room, and the worship team are going to come up. There were really 3 categories of people just praying this week that I thought it'd be good to offer prayer for this morning. Firstly, it's if you don't know Jesus, if you've not been reconciled to God, if you feel there's a distance between you and him. It says in Colossians 1:20, talking of Jesus, and through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. Now Jesus has made, you know, he's done the act of reconciliation, of peacemaking with us. But if you don't know God, if you feel that there's a distance between you and you'd like to know him this morning, then come forward and somebody can pray for you and perhaps introduce you to the Lord Jesus this morning. Secondly, for those who are finding it maybe difficult to forgive, who already have this stumbling block of forgiveness, you can go away at home and pray and forgive, but sometimes it's really good to have somebody standing with you, and sometimes those can be painful circumstances, can't they? And God can sometimes want to minister into them. So if you're really struggling in the area of unforgiveness this morning. Within this category as well, I felt 2 other things. I felt there may be people here who need to forgive themselves, and secondly, there may also be those who say need to forgive God. Is a funny thing to say, God hasn't done anything wrong, but there are those of you here who are just saying this morning, do you know what, God, you've let me down, you've not come through for me. And I just feel that the Lord wants you just to release that back to him this morning, and he can just minister to you in that. And the final category, those of you who want to follow Abigail, those of you who want to be like Abigail and like Jesus, to be peacemakers. I don't know exactly what this means, it's something I'm exploring myself very much as well. But peacemaking doesn't mean agreeing with everything people say. One of the things Abigail did when she came to David, she said, yes, my husband Nabal is like this and he has done this. But she also gave him a completely fresh perspective with other information that she brought to him that changed his course of action. So peacemaking, it will involve disagreement, it will involve, you know, some conflict, but it's kind of turning that around into something positive. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called children of God. So 3 sort of areas. 1, if you don't know Jesus, you'd like to be reconciled with God. 2, the area of forgiveness, forgiving others, forgiving yourself, releasing any forgiveness you need to back to God. And 3, those who feel specifically called into the area of peacemaking. Matt, is there anything you wanted to add at all? So prayer ministry team are going to come up, and the band are going to come up as well.